Kind of fast, kind of not. Either way, always running or talking about it. Welcome to the Kind of Fast podcast, powered by Upward Running. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Kind of Fast podcast, the show where we talk about running, real life, and everything in between. You might notice that we are back in our home studio today, which means we're both feeling better.
Yep, after a week of being off and sick and, you know, on the mend, I think we're both back and running and ready to hit the ground running here in this episode.
And that pun was fully intended. And since we're both feeling better, you guys better buckle up because we are both going full speed this morning.
So I'm glad to give back the host seat this week. So take us away. Where are we going today? What are we talking about?
You know, I do have to thank you. You did a really great job last week because I was not feeling best. So everybody clap for Travis. That was a great job. Thank you. But I'm back as your host. I am sorry, I think. Well, we've got a packed episode for you guys today. We have a listener and maybe an employee who submitted a what does that even mean? So super excited about that. We're also going to talk a lot about shoes. Travis just bought two more pair.
It's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing about running.
We're going to talk about running news, which is one of my favorite segments. Someone ran a 10K in jeans and actually blew it out of the water. And we are going to play a brand new game with Travis and all of you guys called Mad Gab Runners Edition. It's going to be a great time.
And the main topic today, we're going to talk about the great shoe debate of whether, you know, you should have one pair of shoes or what type of shoes that should be or multiples. That one's going to be fun to kind of break down a little bit deeper in our main topic.
Yep. So whether you are out on a run, stuck in traffic, or just here for the laughs, we're glad you're here. Let's get into it. It's going to be a fun one. Okay. It's time for a segment called What Does That Even Mean? And I need to do a drum roll because last week I didn't have a table to do a drum roll. So there's the famous drum roll. This one comes from a listener, also an employee, but it still counts. Shout out to Joel for sending in this one.
So Joel works on my team. He's our lead market research person. He also helps out with the curriculum department and design department, kind of leading that group. He is not a runner, but he is a listener of the podcast. He's said some nice words about it. And so his question was, I hear Claire talking about this maintenance plan thing. What is a maintenance plan? He said, I check the oil and rotate my tires on my car. Is that what a maintenance plan is for a runner? Tell me what that means.
I actually love this question because the car analogy is incredibly spot on. You don't wait until your car breaks down to maintenance it. Well, at least you shouldn't. Most of us don't do that, at least. So a runner's maintenance plan is essentially the same idea.
So normally a maintenance plan, it's a time in your training where you're not working towards a specific goal. And so for like upward running, we have our training plan segmented into 12-week segments. And so let's say that you want to run a half marathon that is 19 weeks out. That marathon is going to be on a set date. It doesn't always align with our upward running app dates, right? And so you might join one of our maintenance plans for a few weeks until you get to that 12-week mark to kind of start it out from there. So it's a time you're not really working towards peak fitness. You're just trying to keep the engine warm and keep the consistency going while you chase a goal later on down the line.
Yeah, so usually this means you maintain the mileage levels that you were at in the previous training plan. So the big thing here is that you still have your polarized training. You still have your easy days, some shorter days, longer days, and a day for a workout in the week as well. So keeping up with your strength training and cross training is also important here. It's essentially just, I mean, a maintenance plan.
Yeah. And we talked about it last week. You know, consistency is key. It's one of our core principles for upward running. And so with consistency is where you're going to get the big gains over time. And so just because you don't have a big goal on the calendar, or just because that goal is further out than maybe our plans are going to take you specifically, then still getting in those runs on a weekly basis, very important. And they shouldn't all just be the same type runs. You shouldn't just be going out there and doing all easy runs all the time. These plans are going to give you the ability to have shorter runs, longer runs, faster runs, easy recovery runs. Our maintenance plan has one workout in it per week. A lot of our other, you know, more formalized training will have two. And so it does scale it back some, but still gets you the stimulus of different types of runs that is going to continue to help you grow within the sport. And once you do start that next training plan, you'll be at a better place because of it.
Yeah, I actually just wrapped up the upward running maintenance plan for about 40 miles a week. Now, we don't just have the 40 miles a week training plan. We have a 20, a 30, a 40. So there's multiple options in our app that listeners can choose from. But from a faith perspective, I think of a maintenance plan kind of like spiritual disciplines. We don't just pray or read scripture when there's a big race in life. At least we shouldn't. We try to do this a little bit every day and spend some more time in the Word and just keeping up with our maintenance plan from a biblical perspective. So
it is, it is something that if you're only diving into the Word or really working on your prayer life when you're going through struggles and tough times, then you're missing a lot of that relationship with God that you can have and should be working towards at all times. And so I think that's what you're talking about there.
Yep, exactly what I'm talking about. So thank you, Joel. Shout out for sending that in. I much appreciate it. And if any other listeners have a term that you want us to break down in Travis and Claire style, send it in. We actually have a feedback option on www.upwardrunning.com/kindoffast that is new and updated. So check us out there. Okay, it's time for one of my absolute favorite parts of the show. I think this is my new favorite segment, which is the running news. This is where we bring you wild, weird, funky news pertaining to running to the podcast. So I think it's time to let our listeners in on a little something that you and Coach Dean have been cooking up.
Yep. So Dean is, he loves the professional runners. I don't know, the Upward Running podcast last week had a bonus episode where he broke down the U.S. National Championships with a couple of his buddies and kind of talked about each one of the different races. And he follows it closer than I do. And I follow it fairly well myself. But in the spirit of competition, you know, we need to see who's better at this. And so it started off as a who could better pick the world championship winners, Dean or I. But then he thought, well, let's open it up to all of our listeners out there, to the Run Club and to the Kinda Fast listeners out there. I think that'd be a good thing. So we're going to develop something that's kind of a March Madness or, you know, some type of playoff predictor you might play in other sports, and you'll pick the top three for each running race in the World Championships, which is kind of mid-September. And what it does more than anything for me, if you ever play fantasy sports or something like that, it gives you a rooting interest in something that you might not actually care that much about. So if you pick, why am I blanking on any runner?
Kung Fu Kenny.
If you pick Kung Fu Kenny over Noah Lyles in the 200, then that would give you a rooting interest for picking that race, and you'd care about who would win there.
Yeah, so if it is on the oval, it's going to be fair game. So that basically means if it's a track event, it's fair game. We're not going to do the field events unless you guys are just super adamant of us including it. If you are, let me know and we can change up our plan a little bit, but it's going to be a great time. Stay tuned for more information about that to come. I am excited and I am a sore loser, so just throwing that out there.
Yeah, we'll see how we do. Know that there are four Diamond League events between now and the World Championships. There's one in Poland, one in Belgium, and two in Switzerland, including the finale of the Diamond League this year, which I believe, and I don't know all the rules of this, and I should, but, you know, I think you can still win a way into the World Championships by doing well in the finale of the Diamond League there. Because, like, Jared Neguse is one of our top 1,500 runners in America. We all expected him to make the team. He finished fifth in the U.S. Championships. But I read on his Instagram that there's still an opportunity for him to make the World Championships based on how he does in these Diamond Leagues. So if you want to do some prep, research on these things between now and the World Championships, you can check out some of those things. I think Peacock normally carries these. Flow Track will carry them sometimes. I generally just try to catch them after the fact on YouTube. So that'd be a good way to check out some of these races leading up to the World Championships.
Yeah, we really just wanted to put a bug in your ear now so you can start prepping. And it's going to be a great time. I am super excited about it. And I hope you all are as well. Speaking of competition, here's something that might surprise you. The majority of runners aren't at the front of the race at all. They're actually in the middle or what we call the back of the pack. I personally like to call these people the party pace crowd. That's my favorite pace, is the party pace.
So you're trying to tell me that if you run a race, not everyone wins?
Yes.
Got it. That makes sense to me. So we saw something from Run Repeat that said that if they looked at over 35 million results and found less than half of all half marathoners finish under 2 hours. In fact, only the top 10% of women break 1:57, and about half the men are over the 2 hour mark.
Wait, so what's your half PR?
I ran 1:27 high, like 54, 55, something like that, last February. Not this February, but the February before. Yeah.
So does that make you an elite runner?
No, definitely not. It makes me kind of fast. I don't even think I got an age group award on that one. I might have. I can't recall. But that's a good, I think it was 6:43 pace to give an exactness there. I think
that's fast.
I think I can go faster than that. But that's my PR, and the PR doesn't lie. That's what it is.
If you did get an age group award, you probably ended up throwing it away regardless because you're weird like that. But
I don't run for the rewards, for sure. And so it's all about racing myself to see what can be, if I can be the best version of myself. And what she's referring to is I've kept my my medals from the marathons I've completed, but anything else either just goes to my daughter to have, or in a drawer in the house, or it just gets tossed. That's just not something that's ever been important for me to keep.
Crazy. Well, you are 100% not back of the pack. But speaking of back of the pack, it's pretty much its own community. There's literally a podcast called Back of the Pack Podcast for these runners, which is super cool because it just goes to show that this sport is for literally everybody. Everybody.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about being kind of fast or going for age group awards or whatever, but the great thing about this sport is it is a competition with yourself. Like, can you be the best version of yourself? Can you achieve things that you've never done before? Can you set a goal and go get it? Like, all of those things can happen regardless of where you are in the field of the race. And so I can have the most worthy, noble goal for myself that only I care about, and the people in front of me don't care, and the people behind me don't care, but it means a ton to me. And I think that's the great thing about this sport. That's why you can stay engaged. If it was all about winning races, well, one person would get the accolades and everyone else would be disappointed. But it's not just about that. It's about figuring out how you can be the best you can, and everyone can come away with a win in that sense.
Right. So bottom line, top of the pack, back of the pack, in the middle, it doesn't matter. You belong on that starting line, no matter what your pace is.
What other news you got for us this week?
Okay, for the You Can't Make This Up headline, let's talk about a week ago in Berlin, there was a runner. His name was Dom Strauch. And you know that I struggle with names, so just bear with me on that one there. He ran a 10K in 37 minutes and 38 seconds while in blue jeans.
Not exactly the most moisture-wicking material out there. Chafage is a strong possibility on that, if you're wondering. 37, 38, that's 603 per mile. That's getting it for 6 miles right there. That's good.
And if a jeans PR happens, you guys heard it here first. We'll put it on a segment. What does that even mean? But you'll already know what we're talking about. So that is insane. I have never run in jeans before. Ever.
I can't say that I have either. And why would you?
There is actually a blue jean mile at a local high school, Dorman High School, mm-hmm. in Spartanburg, South Carolina. So apparently it's more of a thing than we thought.
But those are jorts, generally. those are not full jeans. You sent me a picture of this guy. He was in full jeans for this race.
Yep. But speaking of races, actually, how about a marathon that is 4,300 feet underground in total, complete darkness?
Tell me more about it.
Okay, so on October 26th, there is a crazy marathon happening. It's actually going to be competing for a Guinness World Record. Claire can't talk. It's an underground marathon, completely dark, in a Sweden, like, gold mine or zinc mine, something like that. But the thing is, you can't just sign up for this race. Like, you have to be picked for this race, which is even crazier.
Mm.
Like, why?
That's interesting. So it's a charity run. Is that what you said?
Yep.
Trying to raise $1 million there. I would think there's pros and cons of this. I would wonder about air quality if it's in a mine.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of miners, you hear about having, you know, lung issues later in life and that kind of thing. So is the air quality good for a marathon? If it is, I'm sure it's very cool. There's no sunlight that you have to deal with or anything like that. It could be a really great experience, potentially.
I actually read that it's 75 to 87 degrees in this tunnel, which isn't terrible.
Well, that's warmer than I would have expected, because most of the time underground, you would think
it's cold.
Cooler, yeah.
Yeah, I guess not in this mine. And the runners are running in circles. I mean, it's not, you got to think, it's a full marathon. So that's 26.2 miles, but they're having to do laps. Would you do it?
I mean, yeah, I think this is a pass for me.
Yep, I'm going to pass on this one too, but you best believe after October 26th, we are reporting back on this marathon. So stay tuned for more, guys. Stay tuned for more. Okay, moving on, and last but not least, let's talk about something a little bit more practical than running circles in a dark mine. Okay, let's do it. Nasal strips.
Yeah, so nasal strips have been around for a while. Used to be more popular in other sports like the NFL. You'd see people doing this. This was a thing when I was in high school in football that you would see more people utilizing these things. Supposed to open up your airways of your nose. Some people just think they're expensive stickers on your face. So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the science here is mixed from what I was reading. Studies show that they can reduce nasal resistance, so you might feel like you're breathing easier, which could contribute to your VO2 max, but it doesn't necessarily improve the VO2 max. So the big exceptions would be runners with like deviated septums and stuff like that, but...
I think there's probably a placebo effect here and some clever marketing to get people to buy an expensive Band-Aid for your face. That's my view of it.
Well, runners do say that they're helpful in long runs. So I don't know about you, but I need all the help I can get on long runs. So maybe I could try it. But apparently it depends on how you apply them. Some colors do better than others. I don't know. That sounds like a marketing gimmick to me.
Yeah.
A little bit.
For me, it's another pass on this one. But hey, maybe I'm not the target audience. I'm not the one seeing this on my social media. You are. So maybe that you're the one they're going after on this one.
Stay tuned. I'll be sure to wear my nasal strip in my new Puma shoes. So. Okay, let's move right on to our main topic of the week. Today, we're going to talk about something that every single runner has an opinion on, and that is a pair of shoes.
They say this is a cheap sport, but then you go and you start buying shoes, and this is the one thing that my wife gives me a hard time about because, you know, there's always a new pair showing up somewhere, she says. So my daughter says I have more shoes than her. But hey, this is the fun part of running.
It is the fun part of running. And they come in so many colors and styles and cushions. You could spend hours at a running shoe store alone just looking at them. And they smell really good. New shoes smell good. I said it here first.
There we go. So a new study we saw followed 264 runners for 5 months, and they found that those people who rotated shoes with at least two pair had a 39% lower risk of injury compared to those who ran in the same pair every single day.
Wow, that's a high number, and that is a risk I'm willing to take. I will try this trend and pass on the nasal passage trend, okay? We'll start there first. But the reasoning behind this makes so much sense if you think about it. Different shoes load your muscles, tendons, and joints in slightly different ways. I mean, think about your flip-flops versus your running pair of shoes. I mean, they're completely different. So that variety changes the stress patterns on your body, so you're not hammering away at the exact same muscles or tissues over and over and over again.
Such a great point. So there's a pair of shoes that I've been wearing almost a year at this point. When I first started wearing them, they were my primary pairs of shoes. It's a New Balance shoe that's got a carbon plate in it. And for whatever reason, I've had bad Achilles for a number of years now. It's very common for men over 40 to have Achilles issues, and I am no exception from that. And it seems like softer shoes seem to bother it more than more hard, you know, foam-type shoes. And so this pair, within 30, 40 miles of running in them, I could tell was bothering my Achilles a little bit. And so what I've done is I took a break until that kind of went away, but then I reintroduced them on a one run a week basis. And I think my theory is that it's helping to strengthen my Achilles in that once a week while not pushing me over the edge to like have some type of injury of the Achilles each week. But that once a week type deal, it's a way to load that Achilles a little bit more while not doing too much damage to it. So I definitely think there's a way that you can improve by different types of shoes that you wear.
And didn't you just buy two new pairs of shoes? Well, speaking of,
yes, I mean, so what? So I like to run in two pairs of training shoes at any given time. One is going to be more of a daily trainer that's got plenty of cushion on it. It's on the heavier side of running shoes. So like my favorites would be like the Brooks Ghost or the New Balance 1080 or a Saucony Ride. Those are like in that vein of shoes. That's like my primary 60% of my miles each week, probably in that type of shoe. And then I want something else I can use on a tempo run, like we talked about last week, or a track workout day. That's a little bit lighter shoe that I'm using once or twice a week in those faster runs. And then you got to have a race day shoe as well. Now, sometimes I've got more than that in the rotation, but in an ideal world, that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at three pairs of shoes in my rotation at any given time. And then what I like to do, and this is what my wife probably gives me the hardest time about, is when I know that I'm going to be buying shoes about a month out, I'll buy the new pair of trainers and wear them just around work for a month while they're nice and clean, and then introduce them as a running shoe. And then I've always got a new pair coming into the rotation as my fun wear to work shoe while I've got two pair in the running rotation. And once you start that, they're gone. They're too dirty to wear any other time.
So that is why you came by our desk yesterday in your fancy new running shoes, isn't it?
That's right. In September, those will be training shoes and never to be seen again. But for now, they're clean and white and pretty, and I love them.
They are. They are. You should show us.
No chance of that.
Okay. Now, serious. Let's get serious again. How many pairs of shoes do I actually need to train in? So Jeff Dengate from Runner's World has what he calls the N plus one rule, the number of shoes you own now plus one more. And at the very least, two pair of good trainers that are slightly different in design and feel. And if you race, just like Travis was saying, you can add in the race day shoe. But is this really necessary?
Well, we should say, you know, Runner's World puts out a magazine each year that talks about all the new different running shoes, and they have the best running shoe of the year. And so it might be financially a good thing for them to push more running shoes on you. That where's the bias coming from? That might be the bias of Runner's World there. But I do think two pair of trainers and a racer shoe is a really good one to think about there. Tell us, what is your situation with running shoes? Are you running one pair, multiple? What is it?
I do have multiple pairs. And I have to say, my husband really has been so supportive. The last two pairs of shoes I bought, and he has suggested to go to the running store. Now, I might have dropped a little hint and been like, hey, babe, there's really good sale going on. So that worked this last time, about 2 weeks ago. Currently, I'm running in the New Balance 1080, and I just got a pair of Mizuno Wave Riders, which I haven't, like, broken in yet. I don't know why. I got sick. That's why. But I haven't run in Mizuno since college, so I'm a little nervous/excited to kind of add those into the arsenal. I do not have a pair of race day shoes yet.
Got to get a pair of the high-end racing shoes before your big half marathon attempt later this fall.
Yep, that's what I'm going to do.
All right, so back to the topic here. The Upward Running 5K Challenge book that we have, it does a really good job of kind of breaking down shoes and what you should consider on that. So what kind of things and tips and tricks does it provide there?
Yeah, so Mitchell and Coach Dean did a fantastic job at the Upward Running 5K Challenge books. This book is actually used quite a bit in our church model side of things, but that's a whole different topic. Let's get back to shoes. Now, they talk about how it starts with fit. Your shoes need to fit comfortably right away, like as soon as you put them on your foot. There should be no real breaking in needed, so you shouldn't have to wear them around work for a month to break them in per se. You should be able to wiggle your toes, but your foot shouldn't be able to slide around too much in the shoe as well.
Yeah, I'm not breaking mine in. I'm just showing them off. That's right. So then the next thing they talk about is feel. From a feel standpoint, what you want to be able to do is make sure that you want to go run in them. Like, do these shoes feel like something you can pick them up and put them down, you might say, from a running standpoint, and do they make you feel fast? I just bought a new pair of cleats for my daughter this weekend as she starts soccer again, and I said, do you feel fast in these things? And she said, yeah. So that's what you're thinking about here. Like, can you feel like you want to move in these things? They should be an extension of you, not a battle with each and every step.
That was a really good word. I love that. Now, the next thing we're going to talk about is protection. You guys think about it. You're running. You are literally hitting the pavement over and over and over and over and over. Protection is so important. So your shoes should shield your feet from the pounding of running without overdoing it. Now, you still want to feel connected to the ground. So too many cushions can sometimes mute your natural stride, actually. So,
I mean, this is where shoe technology has changed so much over the last decade or so, the foams we have now are better than anything we've ever had. You know, you put on, if you were to go back and put on a pair of run shoes from the, say, 70s, when the first running craze kind of hit America, then you would be amazed at how far we've come on these things. But there are varying levels of cushion and kind of protection for your body from the impact of that. And so, like I was saying earlier, a real squishy, soft shoe is bad for me. Mm. They feel amazing in the store, but I've learned over time that if it's too soft, it's going to be bad for my Achilles. But it might be great for you, and it might feel like a plush pillow that you're running on that is just a great feel for you. Like for instance, I mentioned the Brooks Ghost, one of my favorite shoes. They make a Brooks Ghost Max, which has even more cushion, a little bit softer. I don't think that'd be a good fit for me. The Ghost is a better version as it relates on that. So,
wait, doesn't the 1080, the New Balance 1080, have a lot of cushion? I feel like that's my cushiest pair.
It is very cushioned, but I don't feel like it's like squishy. Okay. Squishy cushion. Like an ASICS Nova Blast is one I've had in the past. I mean, one of the best feeling shoes I've ever put on my foot, but bothered my Achilles and had to put them up after a while, just a little bit too soft for me. So it took time to figure that out. But now that I've identified it, I know what to look for.
So since we're kind of talking about cushioning and stuff, can you break down for us the anatomy of a shoe like our challenge book does?
Yeah, so you've got midsoles, you've got the cushioning, the foam of it, you have an upper, and you have outsoles. And so the midsoles, where the magic happens there, this is the foam under your foot. It determines, you know, how it absorbs shock and how responsive it feels. And you know, you got all that pounding that's happening on each individual leg each time you're doing it. I think it's something like 2,000 pounds of force is impacting each leg when you're running. And so that's taking all of that, it's absorbing all of that impact as you do it. The upper is what you see where the laces are and what keeps your foot in the shoe. There's lots of different materials used on those type of things. And they can have varying weights and feel to it. You know, some people who might need a larger toe box, they need more of a sock type feel to it. Others are going to be more rigid. And so that's a feel type thing on it. A lot of times when they move from, say, one version to another, they're changing mostly the upper on it more so than the cushioning or what's below it. And so you just got to check to see if that's something that you like. And then the outsole, that's your bottom layer. That's a rubber that's on the bottom. Generally, that's where, you know, most of these shoes are good enough to last, you know, 300 to 500 type miles on your feet. But some shoe brands do better than others. Like the ones I just bought was an Adidas pair. They literally use Continental like tire rubber on the bottom of theirs. Other shoes have connections with other, you know, rubber people out there. All things to consider. For me, there's certain brands that I know wear a little bit better than other on the outsole. The outsole doesn't matter that much in the end. The most important part is that foam that's there within the shoe.
Another important aspect of a shoe that I have personally found is that I need to size up at least a half size so my toes have room, so I do not lose toenails again. I think you just had an experience with this too.
Yeah, my racers that I had, and no way to know it, my big toe just took a pounding. Ended up losing my big toenail after my Houston marathon, just because your feet swell in that long of a race. And so I could have done, you know, a 15-mile training run to test these shoes out, and I wouldn't have known it. But, man, the last 6 miles of that race was tough on the foot. And so one of the pairs of shoes I bought this weekend was a new pair of racers, same pair exactly as I already have, but a half size larger. So I'll be ready for the marathon this October.
Okay. What are you going to do with the old pair?
I'll use them like I'm running a race this weekend. So I'll run shorter races in them, just not a marathon.
All right, now you guys, we got to get a little bit technical. We're going to talk about pronation, neutral, overpronation, and underpronation. And the book covers how your foot rolls when it hits the ground and why that can influence your shoe choice. To be extremely transparent, I had no idea what pronation, underpronation, blah, blah, blah. I did not know what that was at all. So we're going to break it down for you.
Yeah, once you can identify this, you'll be walking through Universal Studios like I was a couple weeks ago, and you'll just watch people walking, and you can see people's foot kind of naturally rotate in or out or even. And so you can see it. And that's what, when people are, when they say to go to a running store and have them fit you for the right type of shoe, ultimately what they're looking for more than anything is, what type of pronation do you do with your shoes and your natural running form? So give us the definitions of those exactly.
Yeah. First up, we have neutral pronation. This is when your foot lands on the outside of your heel and rolls slightly inward to absorb the shock. It's kind of like the Goldilocks of running form. Not too much and not too little. Sorry, guys. Awkward silence. The next one we have is overpronation. This is when your foot rolls inward too much after it lands. That extra roll can put more stress on your knees and ankles over time. So people with flat feet often struggle with this, but not always. Last but not least, we have underpronation. So this is the opposite of that. This is when your foot doesn't roll inward enough, so you stay more on the outside edge of your foot. Now that can mean less shock absorption and more pressure on the outer leg.
Yeah, some people call that supination as well. And so, if you just think about it, if your foot is rolling one way or another consistently, just think up the chain. So your knee specifically, but your ankles involved, your hips involved, your glutes involved, your back's involved. Somewhere along the line, you're probably going to have an issue. Let me say that again. Somewhere along the line, you're probably going to have an issue that's going to crop up if you're in the wrong type of shoe, because you're just putting lots of pounding, lots of weight in an unordinary way on a certain piece there. And your shoes can really help curve that and make sure that the shoe is taking the impact and not, say, the outside of your knee.
Okay. Another point to kind of piggyback on that, not everyone who kind of underpronates needs a stability shoe. And you know what? I actually don't think we talked about that.
About?
The stability.
Yeah, so stability. So within these shoes, there's stability built into some of these that will help against overpronation or underpronation. Then there's other shoes, like I run in a neutral shoe. And so when I just rattled off three different types of brands of shoes, three different brands, three different shoes, I know they're all neutral shoes. And so when I go to look for a new pair of shoes, I'm normally going to those three types of shoes and I'm looking at which one's on sale for last year's model. That's just how I do. I try not to pay full price for these shoes any which way. And so that's where I think going to a running store the first time and having them kind of look and tell you, all right, I think you need a neutral shoe or a shoe that's going to help with pronation or underpronation is the way to go. From there, go support your local running store. I think that's a great thing. But if you don't want to and you want to buy it online and look for a shoe that is a good price or something that you're looking for specifically, you can use the information that you got from that running store to make sure you're getting in the right shoe moving forward. So if you're an overpronation shoe and you're looking it up online, it'll tell you this is a stability shoe to help with overpronation, and it'll be within the description there. And that's just going to help you avoid injury in the future if you're in the right type of shoe.
Didn't you just have, or at some point in your life, a super fancy like running gait analysis done?
Yes, but not necessarily for shoes.
Okay.
It was more around efficiency and trying to avoid injuries in the future. Wasn't necessarily around the way I landed. I have a very neutral, the way that I land is not my problem. My problem is I extend a little bit too long in the back kick of my foot, which puts extra pressure on my Achilles and keeps me from driving my knee up further. And I'm not quite as fast because of it as well. That's what the gait analysis would say there. So expensive way to try to figure out a way to avoid injuries, but I was trying anything at that point.
We're going to have to talk about that more in depth on a future episode. So stay tuned if you want to know more about that. Okay, guys. So if you're still listening and thinking, I have no earthly idea what my feet are doing, you are not alone. But figuring it out can help you pick shoes that keep you comfortable and maybe even prevent injuries.
And look out to experts like these people at these running specific stores are there to help you out and get you in the right shoe. They want to sell you a shoe, no doubt about it, but they want to sell you the right type of shoe and give you the right advice on that. So I would encourage everyone to check that out.
Yeah. And if you are an Upward Running member, we have in our app a national social group. You could honestly record yourself running and upload it and say, hey, what are my feet doing? Am I overpronating? So it's worth a shot.
I mean, we talked about it last week. There's not another place out there where you can get someone like Dean and his experience at multiple levels of running to interact with you directly, either on a Thursday Night Live or on the social boards, or he'll give you his email address and interact with you directly if you want to. And he'll get you in the right shoe or the right advice for whatever might come up if you're a part of the group.
Real quick, before we end this section, we're going to talk about a few myths that the 5K challenge book goes over. We're not going to hit every single one of them, but let's go over the top three. Myth number one, shoes are made for specific body sizes. Nope. They are made for different feet, not different bodies. Travis, you want to hit us with myth number two?
Myth number two would be the more expensive the shoe, the better. This is also not true. The best shoe is the one that works for you, and that can be anywhere from, you know, $70 to my new racing shoes were quite a bit more than that. So I will say that most brands are going to put more, your more expensive shoe is going to be the ones that has more technology built into it, or is the ones that the professionals are going to run in. So it can be a guide, but if you find a shoe, I think Dean talks about running in the Saucony Kinvara a ton, like over and over and over. That's not an overly expensive shoe, but it works for him. And so he continues to go back to it.
That makes sense. All right, last myth we're going to talk about, myth number three. You can pick the right shoe by looking at the wear pattern on your old shoes. That's only part of the picture here, though. Your running form, current mileage, and your goals matter. Now, goals. Let's talk about our goals. So the book also reminds us that your shoe choice does depend on your goal. I mean, are you looking to finish your first 5K? Are you looking to PR in the half marathon? Are you looking to Boston qualify? All that does matter when you are going to look into your shoes.
Yeah, there's different shoes. Like I mentioned, if you are just getting started, you just need a daily trainer with good cushioning and you're going to be good to go. But if you're putting in 40 plus miles, or it doesn't even have to be that much, that's an arbitrary number. But if you're training for something specific and you can get to this rotation that we were talking about earlier, that would be great. And if those shoes were slightly different, so that you're getting different stimulus from each one, I think that would be a good way of looking at it as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, we are almost done with our shoe section.
One thing I think we need to talk about is mileage, if we're talking about shoes.
Oh, yeah.
And tracking that. So I think that some of these apps do a great job of tracking mileage. I track all of mine in Garmin, so it just automatically assigns the mileage that I ran to a shoe, and I track that. For me, a little bit of a heavier runner, 200 pounds. I think it's important for me to switch out every 350 miles as a general rule of thumb of what I do as far as mileage on my shoes. When I was in college and I weighed significantly less, I was pushing 500 plus on those and having no problems on that. So you got to find what the sweet spot is for you and how much you're willing to spend on shoes and that kind of thing. But I think tracking them would be important. Garmin, you can track them. Strava, I know you can track them. the running journal, the Win Today journal that we have out there. There's ability to track your running shoes mileage in there, but paying attention to how many miles you have on there and then swapping them out at a consistent place before they lead to an injury, I think is very important on running shoes and something to consider.
Yeah, that is a great point. And it's not just about injury prevention. The right shoe can make running more enjoyable, which means you're more than likely to stick with it and run for longer. So when your feet are happy, the rest of your body usually follows suit.
Good deal. What's next for us?
Okay. We are going to play a new game. I actually just played a very similar version of this game online with one of my friends, Kara. It is going to be Mad Gab Running Edition. So I've got note cards here, and I'm going to give you a few running terms. You're going to have to read it out loud, exactly what it says on this card, and guess, and I'll count you down 10 seconds, and guess what it actually says. Now, here's the deal. I'm actually going to put some more of these phrases on upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. So you guys can play too. And right now you can just join in as well. So Travis, it is with the first one.
I've never played this game at
all.
Have
you not? Oh my
God. I have no idea what this is. And so this says sock, in, knee, K-N-E-E, end, door, fin. And so what do you want me to do?
You got to guess what it says. It says a real running term that we probably went over today. I'm just throwing that out there. So say it a little bit faster.
Sock in the endorphin.
Yeah, you got it.
It's a shoe, yes. Which I've had the sock in the endorphin speeds and the pros before, yes.
Okay, next one.
The words are aid, eat, verse, boss, and ten. All right, so... Oh, that's us.
Yep,
okay.
Sorry.
Adidas Boston, the newest pair of shoes I just bought. Yes. Good job. Yes. I see it.
Okay. You're getting it. Here's the next one.
Brucascast. I see. Brucascast. You got me stumped on this one.
Okay.
Brucascast.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't hear
You like this thing. You wear them sometimes. It's one of your shoes.
Brooks Ghost.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I got you stumped on that one.
I don't see that one.
Okay, we got three more.
Can Duff Ask Podcast? Kind of Fast Podcast. This is just here designed to make me look like an absolute idiot. That's what we're doing here. Maintenance plan. Nailed it.
You didn't even read it. You got to give the listener something. Okay, last one.
Upped Word Ron Inc. So it's Upward Running.
Woo! You did it. See, wasn't that fun?
I got slightly better as we went.
It's true. Now, if you guys want to play, again, go to upwardrunning.com/kindoffast, and I have some note cards on there that we did not go over today, but they are pertaining to running. So I had a lot of fun.
I'm sure you did.
Okay, before we wrap up, we're almost done with today's episode, but we got to talk about something.
Episode 4, yep. We talked about Courtney DeWalter, and I mentioned that I buy something with her name on it, and really, I was looking for an electrolyte mix 2 summers ago that would just give me the electrolytes that I needed during the heavy sweating season of the South Carolina summers, and I found this. This is the DeWalter Melon flavor of Tailwind there. And I think it's great. I just finished off another pack myself.
Yeah, it got me thinking, why should Travis be the only one to try the DeWalter Melon flavor of Tailwind? So we're going to do a giveaway. It's going to be really simple, and you don't even have to pay for anything to win.
So what we have here is, if you like the podcast, wherever you're listening to it, if you hit the subscribe button to it, wherever you are taking this in, and then you leave us a comment or review telling us that you liked it, we'll enter you in for this. And Claire will reach out to you and get your shirt size and get you an upper running shirt as well.
Yeah. So not only are you going to get to try the Duwalter Melon, and I had to say it again just because it's fun to say, mm-hmm. you're going to get an upward running shirt. I think that we should pull the winner live on the podcast. So stay tuned for that. That might happen. We'll find out. But like, subscribe, leave us a comment wherever you listen to this. It doesn't have to be one specific platform, and you will be entered to win.
We'd love to hear from you out there that you're enjoying it, and we'd love to be able to get this over there to you. All right, so before we wrap up, let's talk about training for this week. So, sick last week. How did last week end up going for you?
I ran, I think, 27 to 28 miles last week. So, I mean, I was pleased with that, coming off of the couch, quite literally not able to move. This week, I am picking back up. I ran on Monday 5 miles. Tuesday, I've got 5. Wednesday, I've got a speed workout. My long run this week isn't super long, which I'm excited for. I think it's only 7 miles. I'm gearing up for this half marathon.
And are you in the actual half marathon training at this point?
So I thought I was, but I don't kick off until I think it's this coming Monday, because I changed up my plan. I went from the upward running intermediate plan to the upward running advanced plan.
Get it.
Woo, we'll see how it goes. But I start that on Monday with an 8 mile run.
That's going to be great. I'm going to get the best out of you this year. So for me, I had my best week of the year last week. I hit 50 miles, which is a little bit more than I actually wanted to. It's how the runs landed there. That might be the high for the whole season for me, because I'm trying to be like 47, 48 on my up weeks here. But did a great track workout midweek, and then had my first 20 plus miler on Saturday with some marathon pace work within it. And so great week that week. This week, the first part of it's all about recovery from that. I've learned over the years not to push it too much when you've got these big efforts. I'm 44. I need to realize that I need some extra recovery. And I'm running my first race of the entire year is a 5K on Friday night in the heat. And so we'll see how that goes and kind of where my fitness is and where I need to go in the next 2 months or so before the big race. So I'll still get my mileage in this week, but it's an odd week where I'm like in recovery mode until the race, and then I still got a long run to get in over the weekend.
So expect a full race recap on the next episode of the Kinda Fast podcast.
It does make it a little scary, but I'll be thinking about it. With a half mile to go, I know that this race, I've run it before, it's got like a slow grade hill the last half of the half of the race. It's like basically a mile and a half down, a mile and a half up, and then you finish with this little downshoot, the last maybe 0.1 of the 5K. And so when I'm grinding it out, I'll be thinking, well, Claire's going to be asking me about this next week. So I gotta push hard up the hill there at the end.
There we go. You got to do it for the listeners here, Travis. Do it for the listeners. And with that, our time is up. Don't forget that this podcast is brought to you by Upward Running, which is a community built to help you run with purpose, stay motivated, and find your people. As always, this journey is more than miles. God is in every step. The good runs, the tough runs, going up the last half mile of a hard race uphill. He's with you on that too, Travis. It all matters to him.
At Upward Running, this is where faith and fitness meet, and we'd love to run with you. You can join us at upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. That's upwardrunning.com/kindoffast. And if you use the code kindoffast, you get 2 weeks free, and we'll know that you heard about it on the podcast, which we would be very appreciative of.
Yeah, we will be back next Friday. Don't forget about our giveaway. Like, comment, subscribe, and you could have some Duwalter Melon.
Yeah, there you go. So keep running your race, the one God has marked out just for you. Until next week, see ya.
See ya. We're both feeling better, and I already said that, so that's going to be cut.
What is that?
Start over. Awkward pause. Duwalter Melon.